Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to The Science of Success. Introducing your host, Matt Bodner.
Hey, it's Matt, and I'm here in the studio with Austin, and we're excited to bring you another business episode of The Science of Success. We just launched season 2 of our business episodes. If you want to learn more about what these are and why we're doing them, be sure to check out the season 2 teaser that we recently released. And with that, Austin, tell us a little bit about how these episodes are different than a traditional Science of Success episode.
Yeah. So it's important to note that you're still going to get all the great content you've come to know and love from The Science of Success every Thursday. These are bonus episodes with added value, specifically centered around business. We've interviewed some true titans of business in multiple industries from multiple walks of life. And what we're going to focus on are the habits, routines, and mindsets that made them the successful titans they are today. That said, these are lessons, routines, stories, best practices that anyone can learn from and apply to their life. You don't have to be a business owner. You can be an employee. You can be a student, or you can, of course, be a business owner. But come check them out. You're going to come away with a ton of valuable takeaways. But we do have a bit of a business focus on these specific business episodes in season 2.
With that, let's get into the episode.
Welcome to The Science of Success, the number one evidence-based growth podcast on the internet, with more than 5 million downloads and listeners in over 100 countries. In this episode, we bring in legendary business expert Michael Gerber, author of The E-Myth Revisited, to share why most small businesses don't work and show you exactly how to build a truly scalable business. Are you a fan of the show, and have you been enjoying the content that we put together for you? If you have, I would love it if you signed up for our email list. We have some amazing content on there along with a really great free course that we put a ton of time into called How to Create Time for What Matters Most in Your Life. If that sounds exciting and interesting, and you want a bunch of other free goodies and giveaways along with that, just go to successpodcast.com. You can sign up right on the homepage. That's successpodcast.com. Or if you're on your phone right now, all you have to do is text the word SMARTER, that's SMARTER, to the number 44222. In our previous episode, we showed you exactly how to build the habits and routines you need to succeed. We broke down what makes powerful habits and shared how to stay motivated and productive no matter what happens with our previous guest, James Clear. Now, for our interview with Michael. Michael Gerber is an innovator, entrepreneur, and author of the mega best-selling 29 E-Myth books. The Wall Street Journal named The E-Myth the number one business book of all time, and it's sold millions of copies and been translated into 29 languages. He founded the Michael Thomas Corporation, the E-Myth Academy, E-Myth Worldwide, and the Michael E. Gerber Companies, and has served over 100,000 small businesses.
Michael, welcome to the Science of Success.
Matt, delighted to be here.
Well, we're so excited to have you on the show today. Obviously, you're a legend in the business world, and so it's really exciting to be able to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. And I'm delighted to be a legend in the business world, in quotes.
Well, you know, as I told you kind of in the pre-show, I'm a huge fan of E-Myth, and I have an old dog-eared underlined copy sitting on my bookshelf that I've reread many, many times. And I'd love to start out with just a couple of the key ideas from that book, because to me, this is one of the most important business books really that's ever been written. And I think it was even at one point named the top business book of the year or the top business book of all time. Isn't that correct?
Well, yes, it is. And the book you're really speaking about is the second book in the series, which was called The E-Myth and is called The E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It. The original book, The E-Myth, was published in 1986. Can you believe it? And the second in the series, The E-Myth Revisited, was published in 1995. And it was revisited, which has captured the minds and hearts and attention of so many, many millions of small business readers.
So let's start with the fundamental question. Why do most small businesses not work?
Well, because they're started wrong. They're started by a guy, by a lady who has technical skills, a carpenter, a graphic designer, a programmer, whatever. And they start a small business to get rid of the boss, meaning they're working for somebody else and they hate it. So they start their own business to do what they love to do, which is programming or carpentry or graphic design, and begin doing it. And they have built then what they call a business, which is really nothing other than a job. They're effectively self-employed. They build a business that depends upon them. And if, in fact, they're successful at it, they begin to become overwhelmed with the myriad and varied other skills, capabilities, knowledge that's required in order to do that. Most of them never do. And so the vast majority of, in quote, small businesses are what have been mockingly called solopreneurs. Well, they're not preneurs at all. They're technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure, as I say in the E-Myth. So that's the very first and most fundamental reason that the vast majority of small businesses fail, that the very small minority of small businesses ever grow into something other than a small business. And it requires an enormous shift of attention and purpose and understanding for someone to make that great.
You threw out two terms there that are both really important to understand to grasp this key concept. First, you talked about the technician, and I'd love to explore really the three main roles that people fall into within a business: the technician, the entrepreneur, and the manager. And then we'll get into the concept of the entrepreneurial seizure and really how the journey typically takes place.
Perfect. Well, the technician is the doer. And that's the one who does the work. In a large company, that's the one at the bottom. It's the guy who does the job. It's the HVAC technician who goes out and fixes the air conditioner. It's the woman who does the graphic design. It's et cetera, et cetera. The manager in a emerging organization is one who manages technicians. Effectively, the manager oversees the work of a technician to make certain that the work is being done the way it needs to be done in order to produce the results that have been promised to be produced. the entrepreneur is the one who founds the company, creates the company, and essentially, like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or on and on and on and on, Walt Disney, leads the company and most often plays the role of the chief executive officer of that company. So effectively, in the company, the entrepreneur is the CEO, and in many cases, the CMO, the CTO, the CIO, whatever all of the C-level functions are in a small emerging company. And the mid-manager, the middle managers, are the ones who oversee the work, and the technicians are the ones who do the work. As you can imagine, in a small business, the technician, in quotes, is the entrepreneur, but in reality, not. So when I say in reality, not, because the technician never truly thinks like an entrepreneur, and we can describe what that is, they fall into the trap of doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it every single day. And because they are singular in scale and scope, that means they're just me doing it, like you're doing it right now and I'm doing it right now. Right now, we're technicians doing an interview. You follow me? The manager manages that to make certain it's working. And the leader leads that to make sure that it's reaching the level of performance that is necessary for that small business, that job, to grow into a business, and that business to grow into an enterprise. Does that help?
Yeah, that's a great description. And I want to come back to the mindset of each of these roles and how they clash, and what that clash really means for the day-to-day struggle of a small business owner.
Well, great. Let me first describe for you the core components, the four elements of an entrepreneur. And I write about that in my book, Beyond the E-Myth, effectively dealing with the entrepreneurial totality that is absolutely essential to understand, most specifically when someone starts a small company. Because to the degree one doesn't understand this, they will never live this. And if they never live this, they will never do this. And if they never do this, they will be stuck in a tragic relationship with themselves and with the company, that startup, that job they've created. An entrepreneur is four different personalities. I call them a dreamer, a thinker, a storyteller, and a leader. So in that regard, the dreamer has a dream, the thinker has a vision, the storyteller has a purpose, and the leader has a mission. In my case, for example, in 1977, when we started our original company, which was called the Michael Thomas Corporation, my dream was stated very explicitly to transform the state of small business worldwide. My vision was to invent the McDonald's of small business consulting. My purpose was that every small business owner who was attracted to our point of view, our paradigm, and implemented it, could be as successful as, on the lowest level, a McDonald's franchisee, and on the highest level, McDonald's itself. And our mission was to invent the business development system that was crucial for any small business to be able to grow from a company of one to a company of 1,000. So I call it the emergence of an enterprise. And so you see that when you understand that role of the entrepreneur, then you understand the role of the manager, The manager's true job then is to manage the system that has been created and led by the entrepreneur to effectively enable the technician to perform the role that technician is to perform, to enable the dream, the vision, the purpose, and the mission to be expressed in the work that technician does in order to keep the promise of awakening the entrepreneur within, in our case, small business clients. You follow that?
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it all makes sense, and it almost is easier to see the distinction in a larger enterprise. But when you scale all of those roles and all those functions down into the head or the life or the activities of a single individual, that's where some of these conflicts start to arise.
Well, yeah, that's where the conflicts, because understand, to the technician, all he really wants to do is the work. I want to be a photographer. I want to be a photographer. I want to be a graphic designer. I want to be a graphic designer. The only reason they left the job that they had is because their boss controls them every day. So the last thing the technician wants to do is to create a control of what he or she does. E.g., the entrepreneur has control over all of the work that must be done in that organization, as Steve Jobs did so eloquently and graphically and profoundly in the beginning of Apple Computer. And as everyone does, who is a true entrepreneur? So you understand, Steve Jobs started as a technician. But as an entrepreneurial technician who effectively had a dream, a clear dream that he wished to realize, and his job was to orchestrate that outcome in such a way that he could replicate it throughout the world. And of course, that's what the first product of Apple was designed to do. But of course, as true of every entrepreneur as well, the entrepreneur is the creator. The entrepreneur is the infinite creator. The entrepreneur never stops creating. The entrepreneur drives everybody crazy because the entrepreneur is always in the future, always in the future, always in the future. The technician is always in the present, always in the present, always in the present. The manager is trying to keep the two of them from doing battle with each other. And so you can see the balance the manager plays in that role. Well, if the manager isn't effectively enjoined into this process, this evolution of an enterprise, then the conflict begins there. And if the technician is holding on to his right to do what he wants to do in the way that he or she wants to do it, insists upon doing it, no matter what the entrepreneur says, no matter what the manager says. And you understand, in this case, I'm talking about the entrepreneur as one of the personalities within a technician, the manager as one of the personalities within the technician. In the beginning, the technician's running the show. So effectively, this job that I've taken on for myself is fraught with complication because it's constantly in conflict with the doing of it. In order to create the seeing of it and the expansion of it into a truly, dramatically creative enterprise that grows and grows and grows and grows. Ergo, Apple drew from a guy doing it, Steve Jobs, to the very first $1 trillion enterprise ever created on the planet. Think about that.
It's so interesting. And the to see these different mindsets, the entrepreneur, the technician, and the manager all operating in one person's head. Give me an example of how those things might conflict with each other or might create conflict in a small business situation.
Well, first of all, if the technician, the doer, the graphic designer has never read the image revisited, they wouldn't even know about that story. They wouldn't know about the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. Remarkably, I'm the first one who's ever told that story in my first book, The E-Myth, Why Most Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It. And then expanded upon that story in my conversation with Sarah in The E-Myth Revisited, Sarah being the technician in a pie shop, a baker of pies. And suddenly Sarah owns a business because her pies attracted a great enthusiasm from the marketplace. So she couldn't just bake pies herself. She had to get other people to bake pies, and she couldn't just resort to baking pies alone. She had to create a restaurant in which she fed people pies, and on and on and on. And all of a sudden she's involved in a completely different organization than the one she started unwittingly at the beginning because of her love for pies. So the technician begins to experience, as they begin to experience the response from the marketplace, from their customers who love their pies, who love their graphic design, that more and more people are attracted to them. As more and more people are attracted to them, they begin to realize they need to organize this in such a way that enables them to continue to do what they love to do and not have to do the stuff they don't love to do. So they hire a bookkeeper, or they hire a salesperson, or they hire, you follow me, they hire somebody to do the work they don't love to do, but they're forced to do at the very beginning of the company as a company of one. As this emerges, something occurs. And the something that occurs in that technician is, holy cow, people really love this. Holy cow, this is something bigger than I thought it was. Holy cow, how do I do bigger? And as they begin to say, how do I do bigger, they begin to read perhaps books on doing bigger. They begin to look for resources that might teach them about how to do bigger. They might get a business coach. They might get a business mentor. They might begin to join the Association of Sole Proprietors or the Association of Solopreneurs. You get my point. And so as they begin to do that, they begin to be influenced by ideas that they never had at the beginning. And as they begin to be influenced by ideas they never had at the beginning, they begin to see the structural reality of an emerging enterprise, of an emerging company, a company of six, a company of 10, a company of 30, et cetera, and so forth. And in the process, they go out to learn what they need to learn in order to deal with it. You follow me? So it's always at the beginning from the point of view of one. I'm one. I'm one who wants to do something that I don't know how to do now. It's now more than just baking pies. It's now doing the books. It's now et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as they begin to realize it's now more than baking pies, they have to expand their awareness to all those different functions that exist within an emerging company. And that existed at the very beginning in a company of one, meaning she had to sell it, meaning she had to deliver it, meaning she had to buy the apples to put in the pies, meaning, and on and on and on and on and on. And the minute she begins to see that, she begins to see that there is no really such thing as a company of one. There's a company of many, but that has to be organized in a way that enables each one of those functions to work in tandem with each of those other functions in a process that has intelligence to it. And that intelligence escapes most solopreneurs. They simply are stuck as a technician and resist having to grow beyond who they are.
And that makes me think of two really fundamental lessons that I learned from E-Myth Revisited, and I'd like to explore both of them. One is that you have to start with changing yourself first. And the other is this concept, which has now become extremely popular, which is the notion of working on the business instead of working in the business. Let's start with that idea and then come back to the notion of changing yourself first.
Yeah, well, I created the conversation about working on it rather than in it from the very beginning, way back then in 1977, as we joined my partner and I then, Tom, created the Michael Thomas Corporation, and we created the dream, the vision, the purpose, the mission, and we asked the question, so how does one do that? And became very, very clear to us, we have to go to work on our company, not just in our company, if our company was ever to emerge into something other than two guys doing it, doing it, doing it. And the working on it means you have to rise above it. And so once you begin to realize I have to rise above it so that I can literally see it and remain detached from it. Attachment is a terrible disease. We become so defined by our perceived roles, who we are, that we find it almost impossible to grow beyond who we are. And so growth of a person, growth of a company, growth of anything requires that separate capability to transcend myself, if I'm ever to transform myself, to transcend my company, if I'm ever to transform my company. And it is a, if not the key ingredient in truly awakening the entrepreneur within, who must play the role of transcending herself, not just the company, in order to discover herself in a way that's going to lead her to discovering all of the other components of one's self necessary to lead and grow and imagine and create what, in fact, one is here to create, a life fit for. And I'm saying a higher power.
Such a great point. And the idea that you have to transcend yourself in order to transform, in order to grow, that you have to let go of the roles that you're attached to, the things that you feel like you have to keep doing to ever scale beyond being a solopreneur, being a small business, and truly become a thriving, growing, and scalable enterprise.
Yeah, you have to not only transcend beyond what you do, you have to transcend who you are. Understand, you have to transcend your name. You literally have to transcend the personality that has been accidentally created over time in order to discover the true potential of the human being within. I'm given to say, and this is an evolution of my consciousness, that if we're born in the image of God, as it said, now an atheist would laugh at that, but doesn't matter what an atheist says, because what does an atheist know? I'm saying if we're born in the image of God, and I believe we are, then we're born to create. God is the infinite creator. We're born in the image of God. We're born to create. And then the question becomes, to create what? And I say, to create a world fit for God. So if we're born in the image of God, we're born to create. We're born to create a world fit for God. You suddenly begin to see the transcendence beyond who I am leads me to something I never knew before. And in fact, in most cases, we'll never understand. What does it mean to create? And the sad and so sorry reality, Matt, is that none of us are ever taught how to create from the beginning as children. We're never brought to that conversation as children. Because were we to be brought to that conversation as children, our entire lives would be completely different. So I'm suggesting entrepreneurs are not born. Entrepreneurs are made, and they're made through an insight into this conversation we're having about working on rather than working in.
Very great insight. And I'm curious, why do you think so many entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, small business owners, et cetera, are stuck in their existing identities, roles, activities, et cetera, and unable to transcend?
Well, it's very, very easy to see. And you're in the science of success. And when you go back into our history, now understand I'm going on 84, and you're not. But I'm saying go back into our history, in the history of America, the history of the world, in the 20th century, the 21st century. See that we're emerging into an increasingly secular world. And in that increasingly secular world, the heart of that secular world is the individual. And the heart of the individual is the personality of that individual. And the personality of that individual is born with a belief system that says I, meaning Michael, or you, meaning Matt, or Susie, or Jerry, or Jim, or Benny, whomever, has the power to do whatever we choose to do. And that is that power is a highly personal thing, a highly singular thing. In short, that every human being, in accordance with the way our consciousness is being shifted, is born as a company of one. Literally, born as a company of one. Here to do what I can imagine can be done, and it stops there. So in fact, fewer small businesses are being started today than ever before. On the other hand, more solopreneurs, in quotes, are being launched today than ever before. And those solopreneurs will never become a small business, let alone a thriving enterprise, despite all of the small groups that are devoted to teaching entrepreneurs how to do their elevator pitch and how to create a small business. They're really not teaching anyone how to create a small business. They're teaching people how to become self-employed. And effectively, that's why it's so difficult to even imagine creating an enterprise, because it's the antithesis of the mindset our culture has grown us to believe in and to behave through.
Such a fascinating point, this idea that and I love the distinction between a small business and being self-employed essentially are worlds apart, though they're often almost used as synonyms in today's world.
Yes, they are, and wrongfully so, because the problem is the people who make up these stories, the people who sell these services, are predominantly and unfairly and terribly, wrongfully and tragically selling that solopreneur, that individual, that self-employed person, the story that they're in fact doing exactly the right thing. And we're selling them tools to do it. So effectively, the tools that are being sold to these self-employed people, these supposed entrepreneurs who aren't entrepreneurs at all, are tools that enable them to sustain their productivity as one person, and maybe two, and maybe three, but never to grow beyond that comfort zone. So effectively, we're speaking to their comfort, not to their discomfort. And understand, it is their discomfort when I speak about growing beyond a company of one to a company of 1,000. Who in the world would put themselves into that enormously uncomfortable and terribly uncontrollable universe that I'm speaking about?
So if someone is self-employed and they want to become an entrepreneur, they want to become a business owner, how would they make that shift? What are some of the first steps that they would need to take, or the things that they would need to do to change trajectories?
Well, let me say, I would argue with what you just said, that somebody wants to become an entrepreneur. I'm going to say that, yes, some people do want to become entrepreneurs, but mostly have no idea what that means. Some people want to become Steve Jobs, but they really have no idea what that means. I'm saying that, in fact, the true distinction is that someone begins to want to have a profoundly greater impact on the world. So understand that in our case, my dream was to transform the state of small business worldwide. In order to realize that dream, I would have to transform the state of entrepreneurship worldwide. And once having realized both of those dreams, I would discover my ability to transform the state of economic development worldwide. And that's what inspires me. I've never been inspired to be, in quotes, an entrepreneur. I've never been inspired to create a large organization. I've been inspired to transform the state of small business worldwide because I've discovered the profound, positive, amazingly transformational impact I can have on every single small business owner who opens her heart, opens her mind, opens her imagination to grok, in old 60s language, to understand, to take in, to encompass this story that I'm sharing with you right now. When that happens, growth must follow. You follow. So the very first thing that has to happen at the very beginning is one has to create a platform to transform the state of whatever you're there to transform. to transform the state of financial management worldwide, to transform the state of relationships worldwide, to transform the state of creativity worldwide, and on and on and on and on. Whatever the dream might be, I'm saying one has to discover first, before anything at all, while you're doing it in this small company of one, you have to discover what your dream is. And I'm saying that that dream is not a personal dream, Matt. It's an impersonal dream. That it's not, I want to grow up and make a lot of money. It's not any of the kinds of conversations that you hear in quotes, entrepreneurial instigators discussing about how to become a millionaire, how to create an on and on, all those terribly obnoxious conversations that have nothing to do with the spirit of Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs never wanted to become a multimillionaire. Now, I didn't know Steve personally, but I know from what he did and how we did it that exactly he was driven by a dream. He was had a cause. Hear me, a cause. A dream is a cause. And so I'm saying the first thing one has to have is a cause, something that you're absolutely, passionately determined to fulfill. That's the beginning. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the vision. You have to have a vision. You have to be able to see the form your company is going to take in order to realize that dream. See, the company isn't the deciding factor. The dream is the deciding factor. The vision is the deciding factor. The purpose is the deciding factor. The mission is the deciding factor. And when you begin to understand that, you understand why I created the Dreaming Room. And the Dreaming Room was a place where you discovered your dream, your vision, your purpose, your mission. It's what we do, for example, in the first year of what we call Radical You. And Radical You is an entrepreneurial development school, which is dealing with that platform, that's that foundation that absolutely is critical. So over here, you're doing the work, you're doing the work, you're doing the work. That's on the left hand. And over here on the right hand, you're creating NewCo. You're creating the future of what you're here to pursue. You follow me? To pursue. It's the pursuit of a vision, of a dream, of a purpose, of a mission, because you're so passionately brought to life in that venue.
Yeah, that's a really great perspective. And this whole notion that it's not about your individual ambitions or aspirations. It's not about you. It's really about having a larger dream that's about creating some kind of change or positive impact in the world and being almost pulled by that dream into having to bring together resources and create an organization at a scale larger than just yourself to create that change and to make that vision a reality.
Absolutely. And you just really nailed it. It's absolutely critical that first the dream, first the vision, first the purpose, first the mission, because until and unless that happens, it's all about you. You understand? It's never about you. Once you discover your dream, your vision, your purpose, your mission, it's about them. And therein you define who them are, who they are, who you're consumer is. Because if I'm here to transform the state of small business worldwide, and the only way I can do that is to transform the state of entrepreneurship worldwide, then you can begin to understand that every single small business, every single smallest of the small, the tiniest of the tiny, are the people that we're most determined to serve so that they don't get into this spiraling negative relationship with themselves and with their work, because it's so self-consumed and never sufficient to create a great life. Never. Never, never, never. It's so small. It's so restrictive. It's so controlled. So I want to break free of that control. And as I begin to break free of that control, free of the mind that created that sense of personal control, controlling my environment, once I stop living with a need to control, I begin to feel free with a desire to create. And as that begins to happen, I swear, Matt, it is just astonishing what arrives in that guise and what one must begin to take on to fulfill this assignment. This becomes why I was born. You follow me? This becomes why Steve Jobs was born. This becomes why I, Michael E. Gerber, do the work that I do. This becomes why Matt Broder does the work Matt does. This becomes the calling. So effectively, I'm saying every true entrepreneur must have a calling. And the calling is not about money. It's never about money, despite the fact that's what everybody talks about is money. Effectively, if you can get rich, rich dad, poor dad, if you can get rich, you've got it by the, well, you know, the short ears. And effectively, I'm saying that has nothing to do with anything other than this very limited self. And this very limited self is the bane of our existence.
I love the quote that once you stop living with the need to control, then you become free to create. Such a great perspective.
Thank you. And it is a great perspective, but you understand it's a perspective that's been learned in the process of creating. So I'm constantly being abraded by those who are operators. And they essentially say, Gerber, you're living in the Weltraum. You're living in outer space. You're creating all these problems. You're not creating opportunities. And I'm essentially saying, well, yeah, one could look at it like that. And during the time that one's doing it, and it seems to be incompatible with the operational needs of what we do, one finds it almost impossible to see the importance, not only the importance, the necessity of dreaming, that in fact, without that, where's the heart in that pie that you're making? Where's that connection with the consumer you're making that pie for? What is the gestalt of that pie? To understand the psychology of that pie, the life's purpose of that pie in relationship to every human being on the planet of that pie. And you suddenly come face to face with the poetry of commerce, the religion of commerce, the absolutely stunning potential of commerce that a Walt Disney discovered with his little mouse and that a Steve Jobs discovered with his little apple. And we go on and on from there.
So, Michael, for somebody who wants to start implementing some of the stuff that we've talked about today, what would be one action step or piece of homework that you would give them to begin their own journey?
Well, the very first thing I tell them to do, and it sounds selfish, but it isn't. It's like, just do it. It's read the E-Myth Revisited. And if you have read the E-Myth Revisited, then go back and read it again. Because the enormously tragic thing is millions upon millions of people have read the E-Myth Revisited. The problem is they don't do the E-Myth Revisited, brought to a story that was told to me very recently by a gentleman who has done the E-Myth Revisited. His name is Ken Goodrich. Ken is the founder of a HVAC company that he built from scratch. And he built it upon the eMyth Revisited's business model. And he told me not that long ago, he said, Michael, you may believe that I'm an eMyth fanatic, but you absolutely be right. I've read the eMyth Revisited 39 times. Now hear me, Matt, 39 times. And I said, how come you've read it 39 times? He said, because I kept on forgetting it. And I realized I was forgetting it based upon mistakes I was making in my business. And as I realized that, I said, you've got to read the book again. And so he went back to the book and back to the book and back to the book and back to the book. Now here, you might think that here I am speaking about detaching myself from my personality. You've got to understand, I didn't write this book. It wrote this book. And that's why you see that I don't stand in fascination of myself. I stand in fascination of the point of view of that book and the process within that book. So that's why I say you got to read the book. So the first thing I would say, read the eMyth Revisited. The second thing I would say is read Awakening the Entrepreneur Within. And that you might call, if I were to look at the totality of my work, and it exceeds 30 books now that we've written and published. But the three core books are The eMyth Revisited, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within, and the third book you mentioned earlier, Beyond the eMyth, whose subtitle it is The Evolution of an Enterprise from a Company of One to a Company of 1,000. I would say that every single person listening to us here should go there and do that. I would also suggest one last thing, that for you to truly absorb what I'm writing about, the most immediate thing one can do is to enroll in what we call Radical You. That's not you as you, Matt, you, Jerry, you, Jim. It's Radical University. And effectively, I'm saying it's the only university of its kind on the planet. I'm devoted to what we call the Eightfold Path. And the Eightfold Path is very simply defined as the dream, the vision, the purpose, the mission, the job, the practice, the business, the enterprise. It's the evolution of an enterprise. So if you were to, in fact, join me in Radical You, an online university, and anybody can join that university, Radical You, just very, very simple. You just go to it.com and you'll find it and you just sign up. And the first year is what I call the dreaming room. The first year you discover your dream, your vision, your purpose, your mission. So that's something every single person here can do because everybody can afford to do it. Everything we do today, everyone can afford to do. And I say that because it's my passion, my, what do you call it? Devotion, that if I can awaken the entrepreneur within every young child, then Matt, what can happen is just astonishing. We can literally transform the state of economic development worldwide because that critical component, I have a dream, I have a vision, I have a purpose, I have a mission. To understand when somebody possesses a dream, a vision, a purpose, a mission, and if you could see me right now, I'm touching my heart. And it just automatically do that when I begin to speak about that. When one has a dream, a vision, a purpose, a mission to transform the state of the world in a very specific way, that becomes their calling for their life's purpose. And in that, one discovers what it means to be human.
Michael, a truly inspirational and thought-provoking and fascinating interview. It's been so great to have you on the show, to hear all of these insights and to hear about your own journey, the transformation that you've gone through, and some great advice and wisdom for everybody listening. So thank you so much for coming on here and sharing all of that knowledge.
Well, Matt, thank you very much for being interested and for bringing the story out to as many people as we possibly can, because every single one of us are here to transform the state of economic development worldwide, but mostly to awaken the spirit of the creator within. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you so much for listening to The Science of Success. We created this show to help you, our listeners, master evidence-based growth. I love hearing from listeners. If you want to reach out, share your story, or just say hi, shoot me an email. My email is matt@successpodcast.com. That's matt@successpodcast.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I read and respond to every single listener email. I'm going to give you three reasons why you should sign up for our email list today by going to successpodcast.com, signing up right on the homepage. There's some incredible stuff that's only available to those on the email list, so be sure to sign up, including an exclusive curated weekly email from us called Mindset Monday, which is short, simple, filled with articles, stories, things that we found interesting and fascinating in the world of evidence-based growth in the last week. Next, you're getting an exclusive chance to shape the show, including voting on guests, submitting your own personal questions that we'll ask guests on air, and much more. Lastly, you're going to get a free guide we created based on listener demand, our most popular guide, which is called How to Organize and Remember Everything. You can get it completely for free, along with another surprise bonus guide, by signing up and joining the email list today. Again, you can do that at successpodcast.com, sign up right at the homepage, or if you're on the go, just text the word SMARTER, S-M-A-R-T-E-R, to the number 44222. Remember, the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral to a friend, either live or online. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us an awesome review and subscribe on iTunes, because that helps boost the algorithm, that helps us move up the iTunes rankings, and helps more people discover the science of success. Don't forget, if you want to get all the incredible information we talk about in the show, links, transcripts, everything we discuss, and much more, be sure to check out our show notes. You can get those at successpodcast.com. Just hit the show notes button right at the top. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Science of Success.